The next item on the agenda is presentation of the report and recommendations of the Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel. Mr. Travelstead, good to have you here. Good afternoon, sir.
It's my pleasure to be able to present to you today the results and recommendations of the Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel that met for about a year.
Jack, can you move that mic over and down closer to you a little bit?
How's that?
Is that better, Doug?
Kathy, can you turn it up? Can you turn this
up? We've been having some difficulty with it today.
Is that better?
Yep.
The Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel, well, before I get into this, you know, a copy of the report was provided to the public several weeks ago and to you as well. I know you've had a chance to read it by then, so I'm not going to take a great deal of your time today to get into the nitty-gritty detail, but I did want to hit some of the highlights and then at the end of the presentation ask that you endorse the recommendations of the panel and direct staff to use this document in the preparation of its oyster restoration projects and management strategies that we present to you in the near future. As you can see from the list here, the panel was made up of quite a few people who are very familiar with the oyster fishery. A number of these individuals served on the original Blue Ribbon panel that dates back to the early 1990s. There's literally generational experience in the seafood industry by the people that are represented here. The scientific community was well represented, as was the environmental community and even the legislature through the Chesapeake Bay Commission. Governor Holton was also a member of the previous Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel, and all of the members throughout this almost year-long process participated very well in the deliberations of the committee. There was a good give and take on the part of everyone. I can't say that there was always unanimity with respect to the various recommendations, but I think in general there was consensus on virtually every point. I think it's important to note, though, that there were two purposes to the panel. First, to review the strategies and expenditures of this agency with respect to native oyster restoration, and to identify new and innovative approaches to the expenditure of those funds in the future. What the committee was not asked to do was to identify all methods and means to restore oysters to Chesapeake Bay. For example, they were asked to limit their discussions to the native oyster and its restoration. They were not asked, or in fact, they were asked to not delve into the issue of an introduction of a non-native species. Obviously, had they been asked to do that, the recommendations that you see in the report, in my opinion, would differ significantly from those that you see there. I think there was obviously some frustration on the part of some of the industry members who participated in the panel because we did not tackle the issue of the non-native animal, which so many of us see as a potential solution to this problem of a lack of oysters in Chesapeake Bay. The panel very quickly identified two major impediments to oyster restoration. I think it was unanimous amongst the panel members that the two oyster diseases present the biggest threat to restoration. but also cow-nose ray predation, a topic you all have heard a lot about in the last year or so, was right up near the top as a major cause for or impediment to the lack of restoration. Let me go right into the specific recommendations of the panel. Most of the discussions and final recommendations did not involve any type of vote on the part of the members. We tried to reach our conclusions through a debate process that involved bringing in experts in the various areas, allowing them to present their views, and that was generally followed by discussion amongst the panel members. There was only one vote taken during the last meeting of the panel, and that was a motion to accept the recommendations and the funding that is outlined in the report, and that motion passed. Bottom line is the panel is recommending approximately a doubling in the amount of money that the state spends on native oyster restoration, from about $1.2 million per year to $2.5 million per year. The six areas listed here are the areas that they wish to spend this money on. In terms of shell replenishment, the committee is recommending status quo in that area, that we not increase the amount of money that is spent on shell replenishment. However, they will have some additional recommendations in that area that I'll get into in a little bit. There's an agreement that we need additional permanently closed sanctuaries in certain areas. We need to expand aquaculture, aquaculture training. I think as you look down this list, you begin to realize that the panel latched on to a number of recommendations that I think in the end will help us not only with native oyster restoration, but should there be a decision down the road to introduce a non-native oyster, that these recommendations will pertain just as well to that species, and particularly in the area of aquaculture. I think everyone agrees in general that whether we're talking native or non-native animal, aquaculture is going to play a major role in the industry and in restoration in the years ahead. There's obviously a number of recommendations also dealing with the cow-nose ray investigations, and we'll get into those in a little bit more detail. In terms of the specific recommendations, there was an agreement that we should expand the efforts dealing with spat-on shell production. Spat-on shell production allows you to raise animals that you hope are disease tolerant to address the disease issue. In some cases, we think these animals are less susceptible to cow-nose ray predation as well. And it minimizes grow-out time. With respect to hatchery capacity, the panel agreed that there should be financial incentives for the production of eyed larvae for hatcheries around the state that are then used to create the spat-on shell. With respect to aquaculture, they want to expand the training of watermen. As you know, we've had a program now for a couple of years where we attempt to train watermen in the area of aquaculture, encourage them to get into that side of the business, and we want to expand those efforts in the future. Does that mean that every waterman out there will ultimately end up in aquaculture? Not at all. But there clearly is an interest on the part of some watermen to enter that field, and we feel like we can help them in that with a training program. There should be continued development of disease-tolerant strains of oysters through the aquaculture process. There was a tremendous amount of support for the efforts of VIMS in the development of these disease-tolerant strains, and there was support for a continuation of the funding of that program at VIMS. The third recommendation under the aquaculture support was to hire a person who would more or less serve as an extension agent to provide advice and troubleshooting to the industry as this aquaculture process begins to expand in the state. In terms of continued shell planting, I think there was an agreement that we need to continue to use the house shells that the industry generates annually. The house shells are an ideal restoration product, but buying those from industry also provides them with the financial backing that they need to continue to stay in the business. However, in terms of planting house shell, the committee only recommended a maintenance of the status quo, not an increase in that area. And most importantly, and this is a recommendation that you will hear a couple of times, is that we continue to plant shell only when we are certain that we are achieving a one-to-one ratio return on investment. In other words, we should see oyster harvest from those shell plants that at least equal the cost of planting those shells. If we fail to see that one-to-one ratio, then it's recommended that we move on and try something else. The same applies to the recommendation number five there to reduce or eliminate the transplantation of diseased seed. Dr. Burrison, who spoke to the panel, was very adamant in his recommendation that we cease from moving seed out of the James River because it is so susceptible to disease. He went on further to recommend that we not move disease from other locations if it is infested with thermo and MSX. And again, in terms of seed transplants, we should continue these only if they too continue to show this one-to-one cost-benefit ratio. The committee went on from those recommendations to develop some very specific recommendations that to start with will apply to the Rappahannock River. As you know, this commission has struggled annually with the issue of whether or not to open the lower Rappahannock River, that area below the bridge. Annually there are requests from industry to open that area, and thus far those requests have been denied. That area has now been closed for, I think, 14 or 15 years. And there are a number of oysters, obviously, in that area. There is some indication that many of the animals in that area are showing some form of disease tolerance. There are large oysters there that are obviously several years old who have been able to show or have been able to survive, and examination of the animals show that they have a lighter disease load than animals much smaller than they are, which suggests that there perhaps is some genetic element to that disease tolerance that hopefully, we would hope, they could pass on to the next generation. What the panel has recommended here is that we divide the Rappahannock River, including the area that's been closed for so many years, into rotational harvest areas. Jim Wesson, who's going to speak later on today's agenda, is going to get much more into the detail of this, but the lower Rappahannock will be divided into six rotational harvest areas, and then using the best available models that VIMS has that look at larval dispersal and the currents, sanctuaries, permanent sanctuaries, would be established in each one of these six rotational harvest areas that would be completely off limits to harvesting. We would then propose to implement a maximum size limit and collect the oysters that are above that maximum size. In fact, Jim will propose later today that we pay the watermen for those large oysters that are potentially showing disease resistance, and have the watermen plant those animals in these designated sanctuary areas where they'll be closer together and hopefully result in a much more successful spawn, a larger spat set, if you will, that will occur up and down the river where these sanctuaries are developed. Fourthly, the panel recommended, because these rotational areas are so small, because the tendency will be for every waterman in the state to want to participate in the fishery in those areas, the panel recommended that we open all of the harvest seasons in the state at the same time, and that if necessary, we look at possible limited entry and control dates to control the amount of effort that will be present in these relatively small harvest areas in the Rappahannock River. Again, we're fearful that if we don't open those dates at the same time, or most of the areas in the state at the same time, that you will have a rush of watermen to the areas that will be open. Finally, under number five, the panel is recommending that once established, the season dates be maintained for the year, and that you avoid season extensions or the expansion of the fishery into the other rotational harvest areas that would remain closed. This is key to success in the Rappahannock River. There will be six areas, only two of which will be open in any one year, one above the bridge, one below the bridge, and they will rotate every year so that a new area is open until the end of the third year in which you repeat the process. Finally, there are areas in the upper Rappahannock beyond these rotational harvest areas that are probably best managed as a put-and-take fishery, where there are shell plants or seed transplants that occur occasionally because growth in those areas will be much slower than downriver. They probably could be rotated, but not on a yearly basis, perhaps longer, because of the slower growth rate of oysters. Again, the committee recommended immediate implementation of this rotational harvest strategy in the Rappahannock River, but recognized that it probably also would be a suitable concept for the Potomac River tributaries. Not so much that you would divide an individual tributary up into six areas, but that you would rotate from one tributary to the next as you moved across time. So the Nomini might be open in one year, the Cone in another, and so forth. They thought it also could possibly apply to the Tangier Pocomoke Sound and the Lower James River as well. One of the areas where the panel was very clearly unanimous in their opinions was on the subject of enforcement. The rotational harvest scheme that they favor and the sanctuary areas that are established as part of that program will require an additional layer of enforcement that we have not used in the past. It's going to involve a substantial effort to ensure that the sanctuaries are maintained and not violated, that the closed areas, those rotational areas that are not open in a particular year, are maintained, and that the oysters above the maximum size limit are indeed placed on the sanctuary. And Jim will have more along those lines shortly. The panel was clear in the recommendation that any person convicted of oyster aquaculture or consumer health violations should have their license revoked, and that the length of the revocation should increase for those who have multiple violations. They were very serious about this issue and, in fact, listed some specific examples in the report of the types of violations that they thought should result in the revocation of a license for a first offense. They're very clear on that. They didn't want to wait until a person had two or three violations before that type of action was taken. The panel then moved on to looking at the CalNOS Ray. They brought in a number of experts to talk to them on that. They're very supportive of the efforts that we have in place this year to attempt to develop a fishery for the CalNOS Ray. They want to see additional expenditures in that area. There was also an agreement that, you know, the fishery, should it develop, should be a responsible and sustainable fishery. There's a need to collect some biological information on the animal to make sure that that is done, and to monitor the stocks to make sure they're not overfished, but certainly they can be fished significantly more than they now are. And you can see that the monetary amount there is more than double than what we're now spending in that effort. But there clearly was strong support for these CalNOS Ray efforts. There wasn't a whole lot of talk about ecological restoration, but there, and the Corps of Engineers was a part of the panel. They showed their program to the panel members. There was a full day of discussion on that. And in general, these four areas were identified as areas that were suitable for ecological restoration, or priority areas, if you will. There's already been a lot of work on the part of the Nature Conservancy working with Dr. Wesson to do things on the Eastern Shore. We have an ongoing effort in the Lynnhaven and in the Great Wicomico with the Corps of Engineers. And finally, the Piankatank River, as an addition, was provided as well. Again, the last recommendations dealt with water quality. Again, not a lot of discussion on this by the panel, but I think there was very clear consensus that it's not all about controlling harvesting and introducing other species of oysters to the bay. That, you know, water quality plays a major role. You know, there has to be a long-term funding commitment to provide for things like sewage treatment upgrades and agricultural runoff and the other things that are listed there. Without those things, we may be wasting our time with the other recommendations of the committee. Finally, because there was so much interest in the issue of Ariakensis, the non-native oyster, we indicated to the Blue Ribbon panel that once the environmental impact statement is complete, sometime in the middle of 2008, the panel would be reconvened to look at that draft EIS and provide an opportunity to comment on it and to integrate that document into further recommendations of the Blue Ribbon panel. So the document you have today in front of you is not ultimately the final document of the Blue Ribbon panel, because they will be meeting again next year to evaluate the EIS and how that, what role that might play in the future of oyster restoration in Virginia. There are a number of panel members who are here today. I'm not sure that all of them wish to speak, but I know that some of them do wish to comment on the recommendation.
Thank you, Jack. Anyone from the commission have any questions for Jack? Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jack, just a couple of follow-up points and questions. One of the points you made in your discussion was that the rotational model, in order to work, is basically viewed as a multi-year framework. I mean, it's not simply, you know, one-year regulation. I mean, we're talking about going through with six rotational areas, for example, in the Rappahannock, two being open each year. I know in the Oyster Heritage discussion, what was contemplated by that group was a commitment by the state to go through that through at least one time to maturity cycle. That is, you know, a three-year rotation, and then reevaluate things after that. Is there a way we can get at that today? I know we're going to consider a public hearing request for next month for annual regulations, but is that something we can get at by resolution? That is, what are you looking for from the commission today in terms of an endorsement of the findings of the panel, et cetera?
Well, I think that's the first thing we're looking for, is an endorsement of the recommendations of the panel and a direction to the staff that you want us to use the recommendations in this document to guide us in the preparation of our oyster management restoration plans and regulatory strategies that we bring to you. Now, Jim, in just a few agenda items, is going to ask you to send out for public comment a draft regulation that will identify all of these rotational harvest areas and the sanctuaries that are contained within each of those. And, of course, we'll ask to open two of those six areas.
You've already basically integrated a number, if not pretty much all of the measures recommended by the Blue Ribbon panel in anticipation. You can always remove them.
We're trying to hit the ground running here today, assuming that you're going to endorse the recommendations. We're ready to come right behind that with implementation strategies to begin to implement the regulatory aspects. Obviously, you can't implement the budgetary aspects. That's something for the administration and the General Assembly to look at. But we do intend to bring you all of the management regulatory type strategies. One last comment that you have reminded me of. The Blue Ribbon panel and all of their recommendations is not saying this is all you're ever going to have to do to restore oysters in Chesapeake Bay. This is a living document. It's one that, quite frankly, they're skeptical of, I think, to some degree. We don't have that much success in the past, and there's no guarantee that what's being recommended here is going to result in success. And so what they're saying, I think, is let's implement these measures, continue to take an annual look at the success or failure of that implementation, and then reconvene the panel 3 years from now after we've been through the 3 years of the rotational harvest scheme and evaluate everything again and determine whether or not we've had any success at all and move on from there.
Further questions for Jack? Thank you, Jack. We may have some more. Can you do me a favor? Put the first slide back up, if you would, please. Thank you. Before we have any further comments or by the commission, what I'd like to do is invite those individuals that were on the panel, and if we can open it up, those that weren't, that would like to comment on the Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel findings. So with that, would anyone like to address the commission? Dr. Mann? Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, sir. Mr. Commissioner, members of the commission, always a pleasure to be here. I'd like to thank Jack for his presentation, very thorough. I would only like to add a few extra words to that. As a member of the commission's Blue Ribbon panel that was convened by Secretary Haskell and Commissioner Pruitt nearly 15 years ago, we went through at that point in time a painful and tedious process to try and produce a Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel report. We did. It was useful, but it was not very good in terms of its guidance. I went into this process with a certain amount of skepticism, and I came out of it with a lot of admiration. The people who are on this list of a history of not always agreeing with each other, often in this room. Everyone who participated in this was very civil. We shared our disagreements in a very professional manner, and we reached consensus, and I would publicly like to say thank you to all of them for doing that. It's not often that we get a situation where you get such diversity of opinion about a very contentious subject, and at the end of it, you have a group who agree and vote that this is the way we're going to go. So this is my formal public thank you to all of them, and it's not very often that I do that, and I really do mean that. I'd like to thank Commissioner Robbins for participating in this. But there are two other people who I'd like to thank in amongst all of this group. And again, these are people who I've not always agreed with over the many years that I've been involved with this. But they not only participated in this, but they also participated in a separate series of discussions that was essentially hosted by DEQ through the Virginia Oyster Heritage Program as we tried to work out the details of how we did a rotational harvest. Now, when this was first put on the table, everybody looked at me like, this is a very strange idea. But I think everybody saw in it a very good opportunity for a compromise between the rivers open and the rivers closed, which is where this debate has been for the last 14 or 15 years, and it's always ended up with people not liking it, each other. This was put on the table, people looked at it, they were fair, and they worked very hard. And I'd like to thank particularly Doug Jenkins and Tommy Kellum for sitting through both this process, the Blue Ribbon panel, and for sitting in the Oyster Heritage panel meetings and working with all of us who are involved in the regulatory agency and the academic community and coming out with what I think is a prospective program that, while it may not solve a lot of our problems, really I think is a really great step forward. And I'm hoping that out of this and the suggestion that if we've got a line, we can hold it for 3 years to see how well it works. That's very, very important. Please don't waver for this. A lot of people have gone in and put a lot of effort into trying to give you some suggestions. We ask that you not mess with it. Let us try it for 3 years and see if it works. But those two individuals were very thoughtful in doing this. Tommy in particular went away with Jim and said, how can we draw some practical lines? And how is this going to work with the watermen? And Doug is here. He can say what he likes about it. But my impression was that Doug was pretty pleased that we'd have an opportunity to do something with this. So to everyone who's involved, thank you. I think this is a real step forward from what I've been observing from nearly the last 20 years. And the fact that we have some goals in here, the fact that we have some monetary goals, for every dollar we put in, we want a dollar out. And the fact that we have some new ideas, I think this is something that, while it's not perfect, I think it does provide us with some opportunities. And let's not get, at this point in time, bogged down in discussion of non-native oysters. We'll get to that after the EIS, but I think this is a really good start. So, to all involved, thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Mann. Who else would like to speak? Mr. Johnson? Good afternoon, sir. Fine. Thank you.
Appreciate the opportunity to speak to you. As has been stated, I was on the 2007 Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel. I was also on the 1991 Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel. I was not as pleased as the two presenters before me with some of the results of the Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel. I brought with me today management plan from 1982, 1985, 1988, 1991, 2000, and even a 1979 study on the cow nose ray from VIMS. Gentlemen, we are merely treading water here. I was extremely disappointed. I went into this at our first meeting, as a matter of fact. It was my understanding that everything was on the table. We were going to be, quote unquote, thinking out of the box. We were going to develop some strategies so that if the EIS came back positive, we would hit the ground running. Somewhere along the line, that changed, and the non-native was not included. Mr. Travelstead, a good speaker that he is kind of blown what I was going to say today out of the water somewhat. But until we address the real issues, and the real issue, the elephant in the room, is disease. Every one of these management plans, dating back to 1982, I've been in this for 30 years to give you a little brief history, says the same thing verbatim. The only thing different is that we have less oysters today than we had 30 years ago, and we have less people's names, industry people's names, on these management plans than we did because they have since gone out of business. I do not understand why we over and over again implement the same management plan and hope it'll work. I received a letter from a member of the commission, and he gave me a good definition of stupidity. It's doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Now, some people may call that perseverance. I think after 50 years of studying oyster diseases and being no further along than we are, we know absolutely, well, I'm sure the people at VIMS will disagree with me, but nobody can disagree with the fact that we know very little about the diseases. We're not any further along. I mean, until, well, let me, like I said, what I was going to say today, Mr. Travelstead, is kind of put aside, so I'm speaking off the cuff here. But I would like to ask the commission to ask, to put forth in a resolution and demand that the EIS statement be brought forward. How the Army Corps of Engineers was ever put in charge of it, I guess it's, they had the most money. And until the state of Virginia stops prostituting itself to whoever can give them money to implement something, we are not going anywhere. The state of Washington, I'm sure Mr. Travelstead or Mr. Weston can give you the numbers, but outproduces us in oysters many-fold. They do it with a non-native. The Lacey Act had been implemented in 1918, and they were way behind that when they brought in gas and started using it. They use now, I understand, about 6 different species of oysters. And until the state of Virginia makes that commitment to demand a statement, that EIS has been put back 5 times. I spoke with Colonel Enos 6 weeks ago, and he told me it would be mid-May of 08 now is the expected date. Apologized for it and didn't really understand why that was the case, and I'm sure being a military man, he's used to requesting something and having it done. But as long as the state of Virginia and federal government pumps money to these scientists to keep studying it, they will continue to study it, and it's certainly been my experience. Again, I would ask the commission to strongly request this EIS statement. I would also ask the commission to request the initiation of a JLOC study into the Virginia Institute of Marine Science to find out why, after 50 years and untold millions of dollars, we know no more than we do. I know in oyster restoration since, I think, 1991, I've heard Mr. Weston say we've spent about $50 million. And we have 1/10 of the oysters that we had even in 1991. So I would also request that the commission initiate a GAO investigation into the Army Corps of Engineers and their complete mismanagement of oyster restoration and the money that is involved there. It's a fiasco. It's been my experience. We change scientists and oyster managers quite frequently. They implement a policy, stay a while, it doesn't work, they move on, they retire. The next generation that comes in implements the same policy and tries to do the same thing, tweaks it a little bit, and we start all over again. We are not going anywhere until this commission takes a stand instead of just accepts the status quo and hopes that this will be. Mr. Commissioner, you spoke many, many times of making management decisions and decisions based on good science. I would really like to know what good science is. I read an article not long ago about Mr. Einstein and the difficulty that he had proving to the scientific community that his theory of relativity was in fact valid. It took scientific, it was no supposition. There was no, well, oysters are living a while longer, so maybe they've got some disease tolerance and we'll spawn these and throw them overboard and we'll hope they work. That's not science. Anybody can do that. Anybody can do that. I think many times and in many cases, and even on this Blue Ribbon panel, there were personal agendas and the aid or the need for funding that drove and continues to drive many of the decisions that come from the scientific community. I don't think anybody can stand up and claim themselves to be an expert when they can't speak what is truly on their mind, when they have to spout institute policy or either say nothing because the institute has no policy. Then their scientific credibility and their credibility as a person is somewhat diminished. And again, I didn't come today to be confrontational or adversarial, but I am extremely disappointed in where we are, and it looks like where we're going. Disease knows no boundaries. Orchard disease, not any different than human diseases. You can make your sanctuaries and you can make your rotational areas, but the next bout of disease that we have is going into those areas. It's going to kill those orchards just as dead as it kills the ones out of it. Historically, the private industry has outproduced, since Mr. Baylor surveyed this bottom in the state of Virginia and cut out what was going to be public, the best as to what was going to, and rightfully so, as to what was going to be public, and left the remainder for the private. The private industry has outproduced the public sector manyfold. Again, Mr. West and Mr. Travelstead, I'm sure, can give you a number, but that is a fact. If the commission would remove the impediments in front of private industry, such as this EIS study, or at least get it moving, private industry with private money could in fact move forward and would move forward and do something. We sat at the Blue Ribbon panel and discussed ecological restoration versus replenishment. And to me, there is no difference. If I have orchards on my ground growing, they are producing the same benefit, the water filtration, the habitat, everything else that the ones on the public are. And it embracing the private sector and getting them involved and getting the impediments to producing orchards out of their way will go much further, be much more efficient than any state-run or federally run program will ever be. Again, those three requests I hope you will consider and look at, and I hope in viewing good science you will not support everything on this Blue Ribbon panel recommendation without some thought and consideration. And I'm sure I've talked long enough to bore you, so I'll sit down.
You haven't bored me, but Mr. Johns, just a couple of things. You said you were very much disappointed, but I also sense frustration.
Yes, sir.
I think we're all frustrated at the way things are going in the oyster industry. We would love to have things the way that they were, but we can't snap our fingers and have it done overnight. I do take exception with the comment that you made about Virginia prostituting itself. I believe that Virginia has taken a diligent effort to work in partnership with the state of Maryland and other federal partners to move this EIS along. The decision to place non-native species overboard is one of the most difficult decisions that I or the administration will have, possibly during this term, if the EIS or if and when the EIS is completed. I am not a fishery scientist, and Governor Kane knew that when he appointed me. But I do need, as I said, the best science available before the commission, I, the administration, makes a decision to place the non-native species overboard. Am I frustrated with the timetable? Absolutely. I wish it had come sooner. But I do know that at times, science, things occur that precludes it from moving as fast as we would like it to. You mentioned Einstein's theory of relativity. I think also it took Edison a number of opportunities and tries to get the light bulb and the electricity working the way that it should work as well. So there are trials and tribulations and successes and failures that go that way. As far as JLARC and GAO investigations, I don't think it's the purview of this commission to ask for those. JLARC is a Joint Legislative Audit Review Committee, and I think if the legislature deemed it appropriate, I don't although the science that comes out of there may not be satisfactory to all, they have been of significant benefit to me as I sit here as commissioner and as commissioner. I understand where you're coming from, and I really wish that overnight things would change. But I think this Blue Ribbon panel has taken a good hard look at what is at their avail at this instant moment. And one thing that I can assure you, as soon as the EIS is available, that the Blue Ribbon panel will be reconvened to see what needs to be integrated into the plan. As Jack indicated, from the outset, had the EIS been available and had that been on the table, the plan may be significantly different. And I expect that when the EIS does become available, that, as Jack said about the living, breathing document, that document will then take a deep breath and continue on to pursue other measures that are at its avail based on the science. I understand where you're coming from, Robbie. I really do. And as I said, I'm committed to the success of the oyster industry in the Commonwealth of Virginia. It's just sometimes things don't move as fast as we would like them to.
Mr. Commissioner, I have no doubt about your commitment. And again, I don't mean to seem adversarial, but you are quite correct in that frustration plays a big factor in where I am.
I share it with you.
I think, it's been a long, long time. We haven't done anything any different. We're asking for twice the money to spend to do the same thing that hasn't worked. And, I'm not only frustrated, I'm also extremely skeptical. And skeptical with the EIS statement because of the comments made by the members that are of the Army Corps of Engineers staff who are implementing this policy, as far as the watermen of the state of Virginia and the regulatory agencies of the state of Virginia. They were just as unkind to you and your staff, not you personally, but your organization and your staff, as they were to the people that make a living on the water. I also have some skepticism in regards to VIMS, and the question was asked at the Blue Ribbon panel and never a good answer given. When one member of VIMS's staff, who is, I'm assuming, providing a lot of input into this EIS, has a vested interest in a triploid oyster being put overboard versus a diploid, again, it certainly smells of a conflict. And until that question's answered, it'll always smell of a conflict. Okay. I had a teacher that said, you do no wrong and you give the impression of doing no wrong. And if you're going to give the impression and not clear it up, then it leaves the assumption that there is some wrong there. Thank you,
Robbie. Much appreciated. Anyone else? Matters before the commission for... I'm sorry. And I've got one, too. Doug, did you want to speak, sir? Come forward. And I'm glad you reminded me. I've got one. You want to go first? This is from... You want to go?
Your afternoon.
Mind the time?
I was waiting.
I was going to read that to Blue Ribbon.
Excuse me, Doug.
Proceed, sir.
I was waiting. I thought maybe some of the others might want to speak also. And I was just being polite, or maybe I was saying the worst for last. I don't know. Take it either way. But I do appreciate for being appointed to the panel. I was the only waterman on the panel. Sometimes I felt like a lame rabbit, a bunch of wolves. But it wasn't that bad. Jack laughing back here. But I did learn somewhat some things. I have a book this thick of materials. 90% of them probably not worth paper written on, but the other 10% was very, very helpful. There were several positive things that came out of the panel. They've already been mentioned, but I'll run over them briefly. Open the area below the bridge on a rotation system, which will keep that area from fouling up so bad. It should start producing oysters and spatset like the area above the bridge, which has been doing better than the rocks below it because they've been closed. That's a very positive thing. The tide analysis, which they did to see the flow of the oysters, that should be very beneficial. Funding the program to control rays is also a good idea. However, I don't think we should be using replenishment money. They damage grass beds as well as oyster beds, and they benefit the recreational fisheries as much as they do the commercial fishery. Tap that sporting license fee for a couple of million. They have plenty of it on hand. Those oyster beds and grass beds is habitat and marine life for all the fisheries. That's a brainstorm, I guess, to some of you, but I mean, long years ago, before there was a recreational sport license, I served on the committee with Bill Pruitt and some of the others, and the main thrust of that program and idea was that a lot of the recreational fishing was benefiting from the oyster rocks in the place producing worms and habitat for the fish to feed on, and they should start paying a price for it as well as the others. So just throw that out there to you. What I don't like about the panel recommendation is keeping the seed producing areas closed to harvesting and buying that seed from the private planters to seed public grounds. I didn't see those areas that we had in our recommendation on the panel here today, on the board, but that's what's happening. Public funds and public bailout in the seed-producing areas are set up to benefit the private planters and deny the watermen jobs, seed oysters to plant state-owned bottom, which need seed. It's just another way to eliminate more watermen. The more you take away from them, the less they will have. The old, like myself, will die off, and the young ones will starve to death or find something else to do. And that's a fact. Gentlemen, you can change this. It's time for you board members to set policy. Don't wait for staff or them to give you a report and rubber stamp it. As board members, you should be able to think on your own. And if you don't understand an issue, call around and ask questions and get opinions from others who work and serve on these committees. But most of all, get facts. I think public funds and public bailout grounds should benefit the public. The Bay Foundation, NOAA, Army Corps of Engineers, VIMS, or VMRC, none of these agencies has the authority to take the bailout ground away from public use unless there's a health risk. It was a law made in the 1800s. It's part of the Constitution of this Commonwealth. And unless these agencies have the authority to change the Constitution, then they don't have the authority for taking public funds and public bailout grounds to benefit the private sector. Now, that's going to hit hard with some, but let it hit. That's the truth. I can prove it. So, as board members, I'm asking you, in the future, you set policy. And if something ever comes up on you ahead of time on the agenda and you have questions about it, you should, and I know you do, you take your job seriously. You can take it a little more seriously by checking in and digging into some of these things. That's not, I don't mean to say this in negative parts to your commissioner, Steve, or any of your staff or them. But I'm 72 years old and I've been around a little while and I've seen some things happen. And they're not always pleasing, but it's one of the disturbing things for me now and they're serving on this panel. It's some things I found out and it all becomes a part of the system. And like my delegate running for Senator Albert Pollard, the system is broken and it needs fixing. And it takes somebody with a backbone and guts to stand up and try to help fix it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jenkins. Anyone else? Matters before the commission for discussion. Do you want to go ahead and read that letter now?
Yeah, like,
because I've got one I need to read at a request as well.
I wanted the Blue Ribbon panel members to read a letter in the record. He wasn't able to attend today because our June 1st delivery of Eric Hansen oysters showed up today, 3 months late. I'm sorry that I'm unable to attend the meeting today. I've asked Ernie Bang to read this letter in my absence. As a member of the Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel, I would like to express my concern regarding the oyster restoration funding project. First, I support the cow-nose ray fishery totally. However, I believe that offering the catcher only 15 cents per pound is not a fair price. If you want to create an industry, you have to make it worthwhile for the watermen to catch the rays. There is $200,000 that was appropriated for the cow-nose ray fishery. I think the catcher deserves fair market value. Mr. Biden can elaborate further on this issue. All cow-nose rays that were caught this year were a byproduct, not the target. In 2008, they are appropriating $400,000 for the cow-nose ray fishery with $100,000 earmarked annually to going to VIMS to study the ray. VIMS has been studying the cow-nose ray for close to 20 years, evidently longer than that from his statement earlier. In my opinion, if they haven't come to some kind of conclusion by now, I don't think one more year is going to make a difference. I think the total amount of $400,000 should be used to benefit the watermen in the field and the fishery houses instead. This would go a long ways in helping to create this new industry. Secondly, I support the idea of oyster sanctuaries completely, but I do not support $400,000 being used to put concrete structures on the sanctuary reef to deter illegal harvesting of oysters. This shows a lack of confidence and respect for the Marine Police and the patrolling of the sanctuary reefs. At one of the monthly meetings, the head of the Marine Police and his assistant attended and stated they felt perfectly capable of patrolling the sanctuary reefs. In my opinion, anyone caught illegally harvesting oysters from these sanctuary reefs should have a stiff fine and their waterman license revoked for at least 1 year. As a business person, I believe putting up these concrete structures would be a waste of taxpayers' money. I support this Fat on Shell project, but I understand that there has been a problem getting oyster eye larvae this year. I think VMRC should have a backup plan in place with VIMS to furnish the eye larvae if private hatcheries aren't unable to produce the larvae. I've been growing oysters for 40 years on the seaside at Eastern Shore, and in my opinion, we will not bring back the oyster industry with only the Virginica. Our native oysters... I have not a very good job facing this, evidently. I have visited oyster farms in Seattle, Washington, which are now producing six different species of oysters in harmony and all of them thriving. I have been growing the Arkansas oyster for approximately 10 years, and I believe that these species would be a viable oyster and would not compete with the native oyster. The Arkansas is a shucking oyster, and the Virginica is a half shell and shucking oyster. If any commission member would like to discuss these concerns, I would be more than glad to speak with them. Sincerely, Tommy Mason, and I have his phone numbers here if anyone is interested.
Thank you, Mr. Bowden. I also have a letter from Tommy Leggett from the Bay Foundation asked me to read in the record. Dear Commissioner Bowman, the Chesapeake Bay Foundation is in full support of the recommendation of the Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel. CBF was represented and present at every meeting of the panel and, along with the other panel members, provided input for the development and the recommendations before you today. The path to reviving the Chesapeake Bay oyster and restoring the native oyster is long and difficult. Some would argue that no progress has been made on either front. While the oyster industry continues to struggle, progress has been made in the development of an oyster aquaculture industry, and areas of the Virginia portion of the bay are supporting some level of harvest that were not open to or able to support harvest nearly 20 years ago. Several areas of the lower bay are showing signs of restoration success, and there's every indication that the native oyster has developed tolerance to the disease MSX and, to some extent, dermo. We would remind skeptics that the bay has been degraded over a period of 400 years, and active ecological oyster restoration has only been occurring since the early 90s, all during a time when population growth and its consequences have continued to increase. The path to restoring oysters to the bay requires a multifaceted approach, and we believe the recommendations before you are a step in the right direction in keeping the industry alive and moving ecological restoration ahead. CBF respectfully requests that you adopt the recommendation of the Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel as presented. Thank you for your consideration. A. Thomas Leggett, Jr., Virginia Oyster Restoration and Fishery Sciences, Virginia Office. We also received a similar letter from the Nature Conservancy as well. Anybody else have any letters that they got or received? Okay. Well, the matter's before the commission for discussion. Mr. Robbins?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to step back for a moment and point out something that Jack said in his comments with respect to what the panel was tasked with. The panel was not tasked with identifying the fastest horse in the stable. The panel was tasked with trying to conduct a comprehensive review of the commission's use of native oyster restoration funds, and also in defining a strategy and determining how to move forward with respect to the management of our native oyster resources. And I understand very well how much that frustrates the industry. But even if the panel could have short-circuited somehow the EIS process, which it could not, then the commission still has to manage Virginica to the best of its ability. And I think the proposals of the panel do, in fact, represent a new approach. For example, the rotational model on this scale is a new approach. Furthermore, spat on shell is essentially a new approach. It'll help reduce Calnez ray predation. I think disease resistance is a long-term goal. That's something that's going to be overcome over a number of years. It's not going to happen overnight. But I think at the end of the day, this is a positive step forward. I think it is a new approach to a problem that's plagued our resources for some time, and it has obviously been a very it has been among the state's greatest management challenges, I think, from a natural resources management perspective. But I think that the findings of the panel do represent a new and positive approach. And at the appropriate time, I'd be glad to make a motion.
Thank you. Mr. Bowden?
Well, I hate to disagree with my learned colleague here, because the fact of the matter is a lot of this is the same stuff. Nothing's worked. I used to oyster in the 70s and on seaside, and on typical tide I would get 10 bushels, sometimes 25 bushels. If I wanted to get 25 bushels now, it's going to require a tent, like 6 days worth of food. You just couldn't do it in a week's time. I don't believe the oysters are not there. As far as the sanctuary areas, we have one to Chincoteague. It has one very deteriorated sign on it. And it's probably the only big oyster, the one painted on the sign that says Oyster Sanctuary. The stuff's not being maintained. It's money well spent if it's taken care of, but it really hasn't been. The Calnose Ray situation, luckily we didn't have as many on the Eastern Shore this year. That's a shining light. But the reason was they've ate everything in past years, so there was no need in coming back. We have probably more shellfish on the Eastern Shore than on the Western Shore. I mean, we have thriving aquaculture business on the Eastern Shore, clams and stuff. Yet on the seaside, to my knowledge, not one Calnose ray was harvested. On the bay side, I think majority of them come from bycatch, either from Halzainers or fish trappers or something, which we don't have on the Eastern Shore, and legally we cannot have pine nets anywhere in Virginia, because that's part of the track reduction plan, that you will not have new pine net. And most of the beaches home are either owned by the Nature Conservancy or the federal government. So you'll not be housing in there. So there will be no take counted raise on the Eastern Shore. I am a waterman. 15 cent, you know, I discussed it with Mr. Robbins and stuff. They wanted them delivered down to Sheraton. There's no way. I don't know that I could deliver them for 15 cent, and I alone catch them and deliver them. I mean, you know, you're talking 1,000 pounds. It's going to take me 4 hours for to run down there, deliver them, and come back, plus ice. I'm better off to stay home. The question I have is this. If we support this concept of the Blue Ribbon Panel, which quite a few people that I've talked to said some of the stuff they never voted on, period, and I alone agreed with it, didn't even vote on it. But if we accept the concept of this, we're going to be asked to identify each piece individually and vote on it. When you all come back, you're going to be asking for specific things. This is not a carte blanche, just when we say, if we vote for this today and it passes. Still, every bit of implementation has to come back to the commission for a vote. Is that my take? And that's the natural.
It's regulatory in nature, absolutely.
All right. I mean, that's a big
after public hearing.
Some of this is good. There's no doubt about it. But if you just want to support it initially to get the ball rolling, and you will come in front of us with all the things, I can do that. But if this is just more or less supporting all the recommendations, there's no way I can do it.
Everything that's regulatory in nature will have to go through the normal regulatory review process.
Thank you.
Further comments, Mr. Schick?
I do see a lot of good things come out of this report. It might be packaging some old ideas in a little different way. You know, the management of the lower Rappahannock has been a problem for many years, and hopefully this you know, will help in that area, as long as it's not messed with over the next 3 years as discussed. I think there's one thing that we, you know, restoration of the native oyster. We're trying to restore an animal. You know, we talk about what was there 100 years ago, and, you know, it's not John Smith's Bay, but it is John Smith's oyster. And this oyster does not like the water quality that we provide for it. It does not like the habitat that we provide for it. So we can do a lot of things to try to manage, harvest, and replenish for the future. But the key is water quality and habitat. And, you know, unfortunately, this commission doesn't have a lot of say on what happens in some of that area. I think it's better to do something the best that we know how to do with using best science practices than to do nothing. And it may not satisfy a lot of people's desires, but I think it's the best that we have to offer. And hopefully 2008 doesn't mean 2009 for the EAS, or 2010 or 2011, which has been happening, because the future of the oyster industry is bringing an oyster that can live in the environment that's there, and aquaculture to be able to produce that. The way the rest of the world has gone, and it's time for Virginia, hopefully, to be able to catch up with that.
Thank you, Mr. Schick. Further comments? Well, first of all, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank all the members that served on the panel with their very diverse thoughts and ideas. As you can see today, there are a lot of different ways to look at this very, very significant issue. There is no silver bullet. If there was, of course, we would employ that and move along to the next challenge. As Mr. Schick says, what do you do? Do you do nothing, or do you do the best you can with what you have to work with? And I think that's what this plan represents. It's doing the best you can at the present time with the options that you have to work with. One name that's not mentioned on there that I would specifically like to thank, Assistant Secretary Jeff Corbin spent a lot of time there very capably in the stead of Secretary Bryant during the course of the meeting. So I think I would like to also extend a thank to Jeff, not only in this capacity, but also all the other capacities he's assisted us as I've served as commissioner. With that, gentlemen, the matter is before the commission. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that the commission endorse the report of the Blue Ribbon Oyster Panel per staff's recommendation and direct staff to use it as a primary guidance document in the formulation of the annual oyster restoration program and resource management plan, and furthermore request that the panel reconvene to consider and integrate the EIS findings at such time as they become available.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Second by Mr. Tankard. Further discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thanks to everyone for the laborious work done on this project. Next item on the agenda is Dr. Jim Kirkley, report on the status of the Menhaden economic analysis and stakeholder involvement. Dr. Kirkley, good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Mr. Commissioner.
How are you, sir?
I don't know yet. I'll reserve judgment on that. Let me see, where are we here? Any idea where I ended up here?
Right
there. There we go. Thank you very much. All right. A while ago, I was asked to come back within a 90-day period and present more or less a show and tell on what's going on regarding this, I don't know, maybe career-ending work for me on Menhaden in the Chesapeake Bay.
You mean that in longevity, correct? Okay.
I'm beginning to wonder. But in any event, I'm here and going to give you a show and tell and tell you kind of where we are, where we're going, and what's going on so thus far. All right. Basically, an overview of our discussion and what's been taking place is for the past several months.